This is Xformation, brought to you by the Center for Growth and Opportunity at Utah State University. I'm Will, and today, as always, I'm joined by my colleague, Caden.
Hey.
Caden, how you doing?
Hey, how are you?
I'm well. I'm very well. I'm drinking my tea right now, and, you know, it's a beautiful day in Washington, D.C.
Washington. You know, up here in Washington,
yeah,
we drink tea instead of coffee.
Did you say coffee?
I did. I love saying coffee instead of coffee.
Oh,
it's the way that I torture Tara. You know, I mimic her accent from time to time, and I think it's hilarious.
But yeah, well, she's a Northeastern. She's a New Yorker. So
some things get stuck though, like coffee.
Coffee.
Anyway, today we're talking about sandboxes, and I'm not talking about the kind that kids play in, or like a sandbox for a video game where you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, or even a sandbox that a cat might, you know.
Sometimes they're all the same.
I know.
Sometimes.
Right?
But today we're talking about the kind that legislators deal with in order to spur and boon innovation.
Yeah, regulatory sandboxes. The most boring, interesting idea in the world.
It's funny you say that because I went to a panel at SBN. And it was all about sandboxes, and I was listening in. And at one point, I thought to myself, "Why can't this be more fun? Why can't we talk about these issues in more interesting ways? Why is it so like dry? I mean, this is a really open concept, this regulatory sandbox idea."
Yeah,
and it just
this is a recent conference for legislators. SPN was a conference for legislators, just by way of background.
Oh yeah. It was a good time. We I learned a lot. You learned a lot. We had a lot of fun conversations with people, but
this kept on coming back up over and over again, this idea of regulatory sandboxes, because there has really been a lot of development here in the States on this.
Yeah. So, well, let's just start with this. What is a regulatory sandbox?
Yeah. So thankfully you put down a very clear, defined definition, which is that basically you have a conductive and contained space where incumbents and challengers experiment with innovations at the center, or even outside of the existing regulatory framework.
Yawn.
I know, right? What does that mean, right? I know. It's this broader concept. And this is, I think, I don't want to say it's confused me, but it's been part of this journey of learning about this and learning how these actually apply in real time, that there's regulatory sandbox is kind of a general term for a number of different techniques to basically create a space for companies to act, given that we don't know too much about what this new technology is going to look like.
Right. Give me an example. What does that mean?
A lot of these things really apply to the edge of innovation. So the first real one that we know about comes from the United Kingdom. And really it was meant to deal with fintech, financial technologies.
Blockchain?
No, not the blockchain. We're not talking about
blockchain. So this is older. Okay.
So, it's not older. Blockchain, these things came around about the same time, but the problem that you face is that these companies, if you're providing some type of banking service, you have to be licensed in this case, the United Kingdom or the United States or a state or some type of entity, right? And so the question is, you have something that kind of looks like a bank, but really truly isn't a bank, or you have credit card services, which look like credit card services, which might not purely be credit card services online.
Yeah. So you've got to figure out what the business of banking is when it comes to credit cards and online services.
Yes. But more fundamentally, it's about that sort of problem that you face if you're a firm that's starting a new technology where we really don't know where it's headed. We really don't know where some of these fintech services are headed. And you still have to have this regulatory system that you need to be compliant with. So it's kind of almost like a third way between the full regulatory compliance space that you would have if you were licensed as an online bank or as a bank, right? And then it's in between that, between this full license structure and something that is basically not regulated. So it's this kind of way to bring in new technologies and to give technologies, these kind of new nascent technologies, a temporary reprieve from regulatory problems.
Well, the way that I think about this, and I brought it up to a table full of people after this panel that I sat in on, and I'm not sure if they understood me because I put it in a really just really terrible terms. I didn't explain it well. But this reminds me of the fight for banking regulation over insurance markets. This was an interesting fight back in I can't remember. It was a long time ago, right? Where banks began selling insurance. And the question was, who regulates that? Is that the business of an insurer or is it the business of banking? Yeah. And so you had insurance regulators and banking regulators butting heads trying to regulate this market that was growing and growing because this was becoming more popular. You want to buy insurance from your banker. And eventually, I think what happened was a bank selling insurance was regulated by the banking industry or the banking regulators, and the insurance companies had everything else, right? And this kind of the bank selling insurance like that was an innovation in banking. You had a one-stop shop to buy insurance on your mortgages, which was huge. And it's that kind of innovation to an industry where it doesn't fit in one bucket or the other that has regulators really confused at this point, because it's no longer like insurance as a broad term. It's things like Robinhood as an app on people's phone where they can trade and sell stocks.
Exactly, right.
More availably. And other things like blockchain, which we're not really sure what that is totally, right? That really creates a need for these sandboxes. And that's what I thought of going into this. But since studying this more after the panel, trying to play through some of the problems, I'm not sure that it's as simple as that, right? There are other things that pop up, like a pandemic that has issues for all kinds of innovations.
Right. And so, and this is, I think this is exactly the point that you're talking about with the definitional question of a sandbox, mm-hmm. right? That when we think about a regulatory sandbox, we're oftentimes thinking about this space that you can have freewheeling experimentation without the normal rigors of a regulatory structure. And so that can, in fact, look like the edge of technology, fintech, or can look like kind of the Venn diagram of two regulatory spaces. So the banking and insurance markets that you're talking about, right. Or it could even look like the temporary, all the temporary regulations or the regulations that were waived to help fight COVID. So you had a whole bunch of these licenses, nursing license requirements, telehealth stuff. A lot of that stuff was basically waived in order to help fight COVID particular. Right. And so So how do you bring about all of these things together, or how rather do you allow for all these things to kind of work in a new way? And that's why I think we keep on trying to define what a regulatory sandbox is, and hopefully mm-hmm. some paper in the near future will kind of have a taxonomy. I think that's probably what we're moving towards on this. Right. But I think that our conversations and my conversations with you have been very of the similar nature, right? We're mm-hmm. constantly grappling with, well, what is this thing that we're talking about? What is this idea that we're talking about? And fundamentally, what the idea is to open up some space in the regulatory schemes such that new technologies or old technologies or technologies that kind of fit in kind of askew ways or different ways that they can all be able to be, or at least can operate for a time being. And so people can get the benefits of operation while not necessarily having the drawbacks of uncertainty. And I think that's the real big thing that we're talking about here, is that there's uncertainty in how these spaces should be regulated. And by adding at least this regulatory sandbox, you can kind of dispel some of that uncertainty and at least give fintech people, you can give all these other different kinds of players space to work and operate for a couple of years. And that's the other
just try things out.
It's exactly. But this is what's interesting. Whenever we talk about a sandbox, the sandbox is always like, it's always a timed sandbox. And mm-hmm. that's the other part. Like, I guess when I started really learning about this, because again, this is a relatively new idea. I don't think this goes back too many years. 2016, I think, is when the UK did theirs, or maybe a little bit later.
I think you're right on that. Yeah.
Yeah. So this idea really hasn't been around for all that long, but I think that there is obviously interest in it in a way to solve some of the problems that we've traditionally had within the regulatory structure, which is that it's uncertain who you're regulated by. And it's kind of even more importantly, because you're uncertain of who you should be regulated by, you're not as willing to deploy technologies, or you may be slow in deploying technologies.
Yeah. And one of the main areas that I've written about already that I didn't explicitly say was a sandbox is FAA regulation over commercial drones. So what the FAA has done essentially is created like a license for each of the commercial drone companies to operate for a certain amount of time and just do what they will. Ignore some of the form 177 rules. I'm botching that.
Oh yeah.
One of the forms that's just this regulatory burden, and it's mainly meant so that drone operators don't fly into commercial airlines or like over airports or important areas. But obviously a company is not going to do that. They're just going to deliver packages because that's what they do. They just do the business. And so the FAA has created this exemption like licensure where they just give them a time frame to try this out and report back and say like, this is how this works for commercial drones. And then the same has happened with autonomous vehicles, especially for commercial motor vehicles, where there's platoons of trucks and they are driving on highways that they've already mapped. And they're just trying this out for cargo to see, you know, are accidents reduced? Are man hours reduced? And does the cost or does the risk of a driverless commercial motor vehicle, and by motor vehicle, I mean like an 18-wheeler, right? The things that ship cargo, super heavy. And does the risk get reduced by using an autonomous vehicle? And obviously you don't know, because an autonomous vehicle needs millions and millions of miles to really get adequate data. But there's this sort of a lax regulatory environment for specific instances by the DOT to really look into that. And it spurred companies to start creating driverless trucks. Right, like Tesla is one of them, and at the FAA for the drone regulations, Amazon, Kroger's—they're all trying out, you know, drone deliveries, which is going to be great for consumers. And so, the problem with that is that I'm talking about big companies, right? And they get 2 years to try this out. They report back, and then they can file for licensure and do all the stuff and get through the regulatory compliance barriers. But there's the issue of the smaller companies that. You put them into a regulatory sandbox and they can try out new innovations, right? New things that we wouldn't have thought of at a company or that are just cool that consumers want. And they don't know who regulates them, right? It's the same thing with the banking insurance. Is it the banking regulators? Is it the insurance regulators? Who regulates us? That I've been racking around my head. Have you been racking this around?
Yeah, I mean, it really is. So I think what you're trying to hint at here is this problem. So you've got the large tech companies or large companies able to bear the burdens that even sandboxes have because part of the issue that we see fundamentally with this is that that basically there's this kind of okay. So let's step back for a second. Part of the problem that we're trying to deal with. Is that these new technologies obviously have some sort of benefit to consumers, right? So there is clearly some sort of positive value, or at least let's assume.
Yeah, I mean, I would at least love to be able to go on long trips in a car that drives itself and I can work on my way. I mean, I would live 2 hours out of DC if I really could, if I had one of these driverless cars and I would just work on the way, you know, do my morning routine as the car drove me. That would be great.
Total of course. Positive benefit. Autonomous vehicles, I think, are a clear. That's like the most value positive sort of instance, right? Mm-hmm. When we're talking about these other smaller things, especially in fintech and, you know, there's another sandbox bill in property tech. So like connecting property and technology together, Arizona has done this as well. But so autonomous vehicles is like the clear value, right? That's one of those examples where we can see a clear value. And in many regards, the way that this is happening is that big companies are the ones who are doing this. I think the more fundamental question is, okay, so what about these new nascent technologies or kind of bleeding edge innovations that smaller companies are trying to work towards or smaller companies are working on? And the problem with that is that say that all your value is basically embedded in whatever this innovative product is. Let's just say it is like just a fintech, you know, product that if you're given this, you know, 18-month or 2-year license to work, that effectively, because your entire business is based on whatever this product is, that the state itself could just come back in 2 years or 3 years, depending on how long it is, and just say, well, no, you have to be you are regulated through this other means, or you have these other costs.
And this is the way you have to run your business now.
Exactly. Right. So the small businesses that are on these bleeding edge spaces have, or these bleeding edge technologies rather, that there's a whole bunch of kind of you might call it like operational risk, right? There's big product risk, but that's really like, I mean, I know that this has been brought up again and again, but I don't really know that that's, I mean, I know that's a problem, but is it really a problem? Right. I mean, your small companies are constantly testing new ideas, and large companies are testing new ideas as well. And I guess the real question and the real thing for me is that I see that there's a clear value there's a clear value here to have at least some sort of testing, at least some sort of kind of project, even if that project goes away in 2 years, right? Yeah. Such that you just at least learn about what's going on. You have at least some sense of the autonomous vehicles and how good or how bad they may be after that 2 year or 3 year stint. And you might be able to keep on kind of extending it out over and over again. So I don't know. I mean, I know that there is this issue that's potentially that small businesses bear, but at the same time, that's a problem for the future, not a problem for now. I want to get to the future, right? I want to have that as an option. I want to have that problem in the future as an option without necessarily stifling it now. And this is always to me a very esoteric problem because it's the problem of having a value now as compared to not having anything now.
Yeah, no, that's a great point, right? When you're an entrepreneur and you have a great idea and you look at the regulations you have to comply with, a lot of the time it seems that entrepreneurs are saying, oh, well, looks like I can't do that, right? It's too hairy of an issue. It's too hard to figure out whether I'm regulated or not. But if there's this opportunity to say, hey, just try it. We're going to put you in the sandbox. You apply for it and we're going to put you in and just have a go at it. And in 2 years, you're going to have more data. You're going to be able to show why your product should be regulated in a certain way or not regulated in a certain way, or even just create a new regulation, right, for just your product. That can help other entrepreneurs because if they have a similar idea or a competing idea, they can jump in the market and they can follow suit. And all of a sudden, we have this great new competitive economic environment. But I think the problem really is, what if they have a great product? They have all the data out there. And then they're regulated, and being regulated means you have to go through all these hoops and all these regulatory compliance issues. What happens if there's a really great idea that would have been really great for consumers and it gets shut down by the mere fact that it's regulated? Because the issue is that if you're starting a business without a sandbox, you might go to a licensing board or a commission and say, hey, do you regulate me? Like, here's what I do. Issue me an interpretation or a rulemaking to say whether I'm covered. And sometimes they'll come back and they'll say, no, you're not covered. Obviously, this doesn't make sense. But then they'll run their business for a while and the commissioners will come back and say, hey, we've looked at your business now that you've been operating and you are covered.
Yes.
And sometimes that's really burdensome. But putting them in a sandbox doesn't fix that issue. Not necessarily. No, of course not. It just gives you more time, right? Yes. More time to operate. And if you're going to be shut down anyway, I mean, that's got to be harmful to economic innovation. So the problem I'm trying to solve, right? Like the problem I'm trying to think through.
But I know that's a common view, right? That but those are like two different choices, right? And that's the reason why, to me, I've always, I mean, I see this as a win-win regardless, right? If the project, whatever that project is misregulated in the future in 2 years, one, you still have the value of that 2 years already out in the ether for consumers, right? So that's at least a positive as compared to, now again, this is assuming that all these things are beneficial to consumers and that's kind of an additional addendum to all of this. These are two different decisions. One of them is this decision, should we have that 2 years of value? And then you make another decision on whether or not in perpetuity in the future, if there should be value, if this should be regulated, through regime A or through regime B. And, if you make that a bad decision that you should regulate these things through, regime A, and yet you're regulating them through regime B, I don't know. I mean, that's something you're gonna have to fight for in the future regardless. And to me, it's like, that's the reason I keep on bringing back to this, or at least thinking through this, because it's like, that's a problem for the future. Let future William and Caden deal with that problem. Right. I don't know. That to me is like the way to solve this. It's like, let's just shove it off into the future. And you're right. These may be an issue, but as I've seen it, there are some examples that you and I are trying to, tackle to to try to go through, because we've heard that this may be an issue. Mm-hmm. But from my understanding, I've only really heard of one example, and I'm really uncomfortable with even like walking through it, because I don't know where any of the data is. I don't know about any of these stories.
It's one of those, I knew a guy who knew a guy kind of thing.
Exactly. Right.
So no, and I think that there's also time, you know, to your point, there's also time for people like you and I or other people to think through this issue and come up with a solution that's reasonable or capable of working in the meantime. And one of the key points that the panel brought up, because this was an issue that was discussed at the very end, they didn't really have time to get into it. But one of the points that one of the panelists said was like, this points out why there need to be more alternative solutions stacked on top of sandboxes, right? We need to be thinking of regulating in a different way. This is an opportunity to think through regulation in a different, more innovative way that's good for the economy. Yes. So there's that point clearly, right? Like there's more time to think about it.
And I think that's what we're trying to do at CGO as well, right? Yeah. And that's the reason why I have a lot of interest. I know you have a lot of interest in thinking through the regulatory sandbox. Because we need to do this better, right? There's like a whole bunch of stuff that we need to get solved. We need to deal with our own, you know, back of house, as you know, we used to say in the restaurant business.
Wait, back of house is what?
Back of house. So you had like two, there's always two things. There's back of house and there's front of house, right? So the front of house are the servers. That's what I was. I was a server. And then you got the back of house, which is the product line. So it's the cooks and the lines and all the people who are working in back of house. And oftentimes you need somebody who can manage and do both, right? You need somebody who can do the back of house work, the kind of the regulatory clearing work, to think through those sorts of problems. And this is what I see as something that you and I are fundamentally thinking about. We're not really thinking about the politics. That's the front of the house. Right. The front of the house deals with the politics of these issues and how to really, I mean, we're still trying to frame them, but fundamentally I'm interested in how these things, you know, work in conjunction with the current regulatory system, and how we can make those systems better, and how we can think through new approaches and experiments and ramp up experiments, or figure out where we can do better, honestly. Yeah. And this is part and parcel of a larger, I think, project to really do that. So
I think, you know, one of the other criticisms of the sandbox is that you've got one or two bureaucrats deciding who gets in the sandbox and what rules they get to comply with. But I think that's also similar to the what happens in 2 years after the sandbox is over. It's not a different issue, because either way they're going to have to deal with a bureaucrat who decides whether they're regulated or not, right? This is just who gets in the sandbox. And I think it's really important to think about it in that terms, but also to put it in another way, that you're not regulating based on market cap. You're not regulating based on company size. You're regulating based on what kind of technology they're bringing to the forefront, whether they are an innovative product creating entrepreneur, or whether they're just putting forth the same thing, but trying not to be regulated. And I think that's an important point to put it at the very end here.
And I think that we're going to have to, I'm excited, because I know we'll probably at least in the next couple of months be working on something that is aligned on this and trying to work through this. I think that there's a lot of space to continue to even talk through this issue. So that being said, I think we're pretty much at time.
I mean, this is a new issue, so it doesn't really take long to get through.
I know, right? Right. Well, it's also that you and I are kind of working through this, but... And trying to think about part of this is thinking about where we can be helpful and think about where our resources and where, you know, the people that we work with and even individuals that are on, you know, that are listening to us, please obviously reach out to us. You know, that being said, this is one of the last episodes this season. We're going to be doing a wrap up soon and then taking a break, because, you know, everyone obviously deserves a break, obviously, except for Caden. Caden does not deserve a break.
I'm not allowed to sleep here. I know. It's not my job.
So until next time, be well, friends.